If you want to work in aviation comedy, you could do worse than starting out as a flight instructor. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. At AOPA's 2008 fly-in, attendees enjoyed Rod Machado's unique approach to the serious business of aviation safety. Today, in the first of two parts, we'll share with you Rod's unique take on managing in-flight emergencies.
Welcome to AOPA fly-in, and I'm happy to be here talking to you today about handling in-flight emergencies. And I've got quite a few things to share with you today. Today is a very special day because today you're going to hear things you don't normally hear for a speech in this price range. So it'll be very unique. How many people have ever heard or seen me speak before? How many people have, well, there goes that material. Who has never heard or seen me speak before? Okay, who's never seen me sweat like this before? Excellent. Obviously, you've not seen my precision approaches. I sweat a lot during those. Folks, let me tell you what I believe about flying airplanes. And first of all, I'm all wired up here. I look like part of the Borg Collective, so I do apologize. This is what I believe about flying airplanes. Number one, I believe that if airplane flying required luck in order to do it safely, I would never get in an airplane again. And that is the honest to goodness truth. I just wouldn't do it. Unless, of course, maybe I had a helmet and only flew over mattress factories. But I honestly don't believe that. Luck is one of those qualities that identifies an area in our vocabulary where we don't have sufficient vocabulary to explain why some pilots can fly for such a long time and fly safely. And you, if you're like me, and I know I am, take some time on this one, folks. Some of these are just for me, like that one. I don't like feeling uncomfortable in an airplane. And many years ago, I promised myself I would never scare myself in an airplane. This is back in 1985. I remember the exact situation that precipitated that, because I got scared in an airplane. I got scared in an airplane a lot when I was young and a younger flight instructor. And I decided I just wasn't going to do that anymore. And as a result, I developed this particular seminar to help answer some of the questions that you and I have about what it takes to be safe in an airplane. In other words, what happens if you have one of the unusual conditions we call an in-flight emergency? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. And then I'll give you a chance, after I talk and do my little spiel, I'll give you a chance to ask me some questions about what concerns you in an airplane. The airplanes we fly are relatively safe to fly. When you think about it, a piston engine airplane, the chance of having an engine failure in a piston engine airplane nowadays is relatively rare. Now, I'm going to put myself on the line here, and I'm going to ask this question, and I've seen this so many times, I'm pretty sure exactly what's going to happen here. But how many people in here have ever had a catastrophic engine failure in a general aviation airplane? A general aviation airplane. Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's not too bad. I mean, it's not good, but it's not too bad. And you folks probably have been flying, looks like you've been flying, you're a little more mature crowd, so perhaps 10, 20 years, 30 years. It's incredible that you can actually meet somebody that had a catastrophic engine failure in an airplane. And those numbers were actually a little bit higher than I get in most groups. It's typically around 3-4%. But here's the interesting thing. You folks had a catastrophic engine failure, and if you don't mind the way I loosely construct this logic, you're all here, right? Exactly. Yeah, but what about the people that did have one that aren't here? Okay, we're not talking about that group. Okay? Yeah. It just aren't that many. So if you play with the statistics right, you can really make this work to your advantage. But the fact is, airplane flying is pretty safe. All you have to do is this. Number one, fly airplanes that are reasonably well-maintained, correct? In other words, you shouldn't fly an airplane that is so poorly maintained that the Blue Book value varies based on the amount of gas in the tank. That's one. And that goes without saying. You shouldn't fly an airplane that is so poorly performs that the only reason it appears to climb is because the earth is curved. So you got a good idea there what goes on. And it's rare to have a problem in an airplane. But when you do have one, it's nice to know what to do, correct? And I would dare say here that if you wanted to reduce 95% of all potential problems you could ever have in an airplane, 95%, all you'd have to do is one thing. Actually, two things. Number one,
Get another engine.
No, not that. Well, actually, if you have a multi-engine airplane, that way you could start if the left engine quits, you can start the right engine. That's pretty good. No, not good. Or fly a Ford tri-motor, which they call it a tri-motor because one engine quits, you try another motor. In fact, they should have called it the Ford try that motor. Try that motor now. No. Folks, the reason people have engine failures in an airplane, the reason people have problems in an airplane basically are twofold, if you wanted to be reductionistic here. Number one, they run out of gas. Number two, they fly into weather that they're not capable of handling. Weather and gas, those two things. And some people, they run out of gas, it's simply a matter of switching tanks to start their engine, correct? In other words, they've got gas in another tank. Hopefully they can find that gas. In some cases, in most cases, they can. But that's fuel exhaustion, not or fuel starvation. Fuel exhaustion is where you run completely out of gas. And that's why when I fly an airplane, I don't fly, this is a rule I live by myself. I try never, ever, 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 never. I try to deal with absolutes only in certain conditions, and this is one. Ever to fly with less than 1/4 tanks in my airplane. I own a P210. So, in any airplane, owned a Bonanza before that. So, 1/4 tanks is my minimum reserve, which gives me in my airplane probably about an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes reserve. I seldom ever have to get somewhere that bad. But in case I do, you know, I have an hour and a half reserve, which is hour and 45 minutes reserve. I basically have a 7-hour total fuel tank capacity in my airplane in the P210. So, but the fact is, 1/4 tank. Flying in weather, you know, if you don't want to hurt yourself in an airplane, you just have to avoid bad weather. I know that sounds simple. It sounds easy when you say it up here. The fact is, it is simple. The reason people have bad weather problems is because they have to get somewhere so bad that the weather isn't as much of a concern to them as it should be.
We'll be back for more on managing in-flight emergencies with aviation humorist Rod Machado in a moment. I'm Paul Flagg, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Flagg. We continue now with Rod Machado's presentation on in-flight emergencies from the 2008 AOPA fly-in.
Having in-flight emergencies in an airplane are actually rather rare. And therefore, the things I talk about are things that are probably never going to happen to you, but it's nice to know what happened or what to do in case they do. So let's take the first in-flight emergency then. The thing that I think concerns everybody in an airplane, and that is how strong are the wings on your airplane? How strong are the wings on your airplane? You know that airplane wings are flexible a little bit, right? Longer the higher the aspect ratio, the greater the flex that you can visually see. In other words, you can identify. Yeah, it's kind of scary sometimes when you see it out there. Well, let's put it this way. If you take a Cessna 172 and you were to turn it upside down so you, in other words, just turn it upside down so you could put people on the bottom of the wing loading it this way, that would be called positive stress loading, positive G stress loading. You could load that Cessna 172 with 57 170-pound men, and those wings would flex before they exceed their elastic limit. Are you aware of that? 57 170-pound men. Now, don't do this. unless, of course, it's a rental. Then in that case, that would be better. But wings don't break because of clear air turbulence, and clear air turbulence breaking a wing, in other words, snapping it off by wind shear. It doesn't work that way. Wings typically break for one very important reason. Remember, wings are very, very strong. They break for one very important reason. Does anybody know what that reason is? Care to guess?
Flutter?
Flutter is one, you know, we'll come back to flutter in a second. Yes, flutter can be a problem. It's typically not why wings break in an airplane. Yeah, a flutter may be the end result, but yeah, I'm looking for one word. Speed, exactly, which sounds like the ground, but speed is what we're looking for. People lose control of their airplane. As a result of losing control of their airplane, they exceed VNE, and thus, eventually, VD. Flutter is a potential problem, but the problem that many pilots experience is when they accelerate the airplane to high speeds, pulling back on the elevator controls can overstress the wings. And when you think about it, a Cessna, an A36 Bonanza can accelerate from 200 to 300 miles per hour in about 6 seconds, nose down. Left to its own, nose down in a spiral, 200 to 300 miles per hour in about 6 seconds, it's an incredibly clean airplane. You fly into a cloud, let's say, hopefully this is not you but somebody else, hopefully nobody else, but this typically does happen. Person flies into the cloud, they're not instrument competent, they lose control of their airplane, or perhaps the turbulence is so bad that it causes them to lose control of their airplane. That's a possibility. And as a result of that, the airplane spirals out of control, they pop out the side of the cloud, they see the ground or the bottom of the cloud, they pull back and overstress the wings on their airplane. And that's why you can easily bend a wing on an airplane or induce flutter, divergent flutter, which can be very dangerous. We'll get back to flutter in a second. In a P210, to pull 1G takes about 20 pounds of force on the elevator control. In other words, an airplane of that size. In an A36 Bonanza, to pull 1G takes about 13 pounds of force on the airplane at the VNE range. So in a Bonanza, it's a whole lot easier to overstress an airplane than it is an airplane like a 206 or a P210 or something like that, right? Are you with me? So my point to you is this. People lose control of airplanes. Airplanes at high speeds can be overstressed. Divergent flutter can be a problem. And if that happens in an airplane, folks, you have to regain your speed. You have to regain control of the speed of an airplane. And the essence there is this. The essence of a solution to the problem is doing one thing that was actually written in the Bonanza owner's manual. Actually, it was the Baron owner's manual many, many years ago, and that is this. In an airplane, if you lose control of the speed for whatever reason, reach over and put the what down? The gear, exactly. Put the gear down. Because putting the gear down slows the airplane down and helps regain control of the airplane speed. Very simple thing, but it does work. Fortunately, in the 172 version, the fixed gear aircraft, the gear is already down for you, which is really kind of neat. So the issue there is that John Frank said that the Cessna 172 nose down probably won't exceed its terminal velocity because it has struts and because it's sort of a bulky type of aircraft, right? So in this sense, even if you wanted to, you probably couldn't, in other words, if you were to say today I'm going to go up and I'm going to take that 172 and I'm going to dive it down till the wings come off in the airplane. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Even if you wanted to, simply because the airplane is a very high drag profile airplane. So with that in mind, speed is an extremely important issue. Do you know what divergent flutter is? Have you ever experienced that or ever heard of that term before? Yeah, divergent flutter is one of those things where the two types of flutter. There's continuous flutter and divergent flutter. Divergent flutter is the dangerous one. It's a high-speed phenomenon. What happens with divergent flutter is this. The control surfaces on all your airplanes are balanced. Balanced to the extent that at high speeds, they don't vibrate. Now, they're either dynamically balanced with weights or they're balanced in tension with wires and cables, like some of the old Bonanzas were. And in those aircraft, if for some reason the control surfaces, ailerons, elevator, or rudder become unbiased because of, let's say, ice on the controls or loose control cables, then what happens is at higher speeds, the control surfaces can start to vibrate. When the control surfaces start to vibrate, such as the trim tab or the actual control surface, the elevator, rudder, or aileron, then what it can do is it can drive and create an harmonic oscillation in the actual surface it's connected to, and the amplitude to continue to increase and increase and can eventually rip that control surface right off the airplane. That is can rip the actual thing it's attached to right off the airplane. That is in aviation what we call a bad thing. So the way to solve a problem with flutter is this, to reach over, pull the throttle back, and load the surface. In other words, pull back on the slide back on the elevator control, twist the aileron, and perhaps push the rudder just a little bit. You have to load the surface just a little bit. Now, the thing I want you to know about flutter is this. Flutter is a high-speed phenomenon. And I'm going to make a very general statement here that should cover all problems associated with high-speed phenomena or extreme vibration. There are only two things on the airplane that can cause extreme vibration. Flutter of a control surface is one. The other one is what? Unbalanced prop or something dealing with the vertiginous energy of the engine, the rotating energy of the engine. And so if you experience extreme vibration, dynamic or divergent flutter, number one, or such as you have a broken prop tip, as an example, or perhaps a piston left your airplane, that would be a very bad thing, actually. Passengers normally tell you when a piston left your airplane because they go, oh, look, there goes our piston. And they immediately become the piston tracking device. Oh, look, there it is. It's falling. Oh, like, don't we need that? And that's what they say. The thing with experiencing extreme vibration, the thing you have to do is reach over and do what? Pull back the throttle. Obviously, with a broken propeller tip, a bad engine, or severe engine problem, or divergent flutter, what did I say? Pull back the throttle, and then do what? Your natural response is to what? Load the control surface a little bit of opposite aileron, and a little bit of rudder. In this instance, what you want to do is change the weight bias or the force bias on the control surface, thereby helping reduce flutter. The objective is to slow the airplane down, and pulling the throttle back does that. But with extreme vibration, propeller tip or something like that missing, throttle's got to come back immediately. Extreme vibration means pulling that throttle back immediately as the first step in solving the problem. Are you with me? That'll take care of the divergent problem, the divergent flutter problem, if you get it quick enough.
When we continue tomorrow, Rod uses humor to tackle the topic of propellers which fail in flight. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.